RadioInfluence.com.
He got him in the white trunks. He heard him.
Beautiful.
Oh, God.
That's beautiful. He's got it.
And he forced the top. Wow. Hey, here's Lucas Avicii. And it's all over. It's nice. All over. First round knockout.
Big
is how Rich Franklin retained his belt.
The one thing that I never thought in a million years would happen.
The champion. The challenger. Here we go.
This is the MMA Report with Jason Floyd on Radio Influence.
Welcome to the November 7th edition of the MMA Report podcast with Daniel Galvan. I am Jason Floyd. I appreciate taking time to download the MMA Report podcast. Of course, always comes out every Wednesday on RadioInfluence.com. Come here on this week's edition of the show. We're going to take a look back at what happened at UFC 230. We'll talk about Daniel Cormier's place in the greatest of all time conversation. Where does Chris Weidman go after being defeated by Jacare Souza? Jared Cannonier's amazing upset over David Branch. No one saw that coming. Plus everything else that happened at UFC 230. Going to have four interviews for you. Going to chat with Emmanuel Sanchez. Of course, going to be challenging Patricio Pitbull for the Bellator featherweight title next Thursday over in Israel. Then we're going to talk to two fighters. They're going to be fighting each other on Saturday at UFC Fight Night 139. A fight that came together on short notice. Devontae Smith and Julian Arosa. Of course, Julian making his return to the UFC. And of course, Devontae Smith, this will be his official UFC debut after getting that win on the Contender Series. And the final interview is going to be with an undefeated flyweight on a Factory X Muay Thai out in Denver, Colorado, Nate Smith. Plus, we're going to preview Saturday's UFC Fight Night 139. We'll have our buy-sell segment. Of course, if you're not subscribing to this podcast, you can do that on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, and Google Play. And while you're there, leave a rating and review. Daniel, UFC 230, it had some things that we completely expected to happen, the way Daniel Cormier went out there and win. But it also had a huge surprise in Jared Cannonier.
Oh, yeah, that was the big surprise. A lot of times we're home to plenty of surprises, but I would say you look at that middleweight division, and a lot of things went as expected. But Jared Cannonier moving down and taking things at 185, he took on a guy in David Branch who's proven himself as like a tough veteran. And after watching that fight, it's like you don't even give David Branch a second thought. Jared Cannonier used him as a canvas to make a statement that he wants to be a part of this ESPN Plus show or this ESPN show. It seemed like Dana White was hinting at the fact that some of the guys on this card are going to be involved on the ESPN show. And Jared Cannonier with his performance, I mean, this was essentially a middleweight spotlight show on the main card. And I came away just so impressed by Cannonier and what he did against David Branch. But again, to me, the story is not only Cannonier, but it is so much Israel Adesanya, Jason. Mm-hmm. The way he completely tooled Derek Brunson. You talk about that ESPN show, I have a big feeling Adesanya is going to be the guy in the main event there.
Yeah, that definitely stuck out to me when I watched Dana White's post-fight press conference where he was talking about kind of how this car was going to kind of really set up that first of the year. I believe it was January 19th or somewhere along there of that car that's going to be on ESPN Plus. I mean, the thing that impressed me the most about Israel in that fight was really his work against the fence where Derek Brunson was trying to get the fight to the ground. To me, I mean, we can talk about the striking aspect they show. We all know he's a great striker, but to me, it was his work against the fence and stopping Derek Brunson, even though Derek Brunson was doing whatever he could to get the fight to the ground. But to me, that was what I was most impressed about him.
Yeah, and just to contrast that with Cannonier, he did not as great of a job, I thought, of defending the wrestling. There were times where Branch took him down, but when you look at Cannonier, you look at Adesanya, you know, man, these guys are dynamite fighters on the feet. And the goal for their long-term success is getting him back up there, and that's what Cannonier was able to do as well. And Adesanya, I mean, that wasn't even a question. I mean, he completely made this a fight where it was 100% where he wanted it to play out. So for Cannonier, it was about defending takedowns. He got taken down a couple times and he got up. For Adesanya, man, that wasn't even a question.
Yeah, I mean, for Israel, I mean, obviously you have to look at potentially that next star the UFC is looking for. Obviously, has a fighting style that people love, and obviously a very confident guy. But the main event, Daniel Cormier went out there and did what we expected Daniel Cormier to do. Of course, this is a fight that we learned after the fact nearly did not take place, as Daniel Cormier throws out his back on Saturday morning. His manager, Bob Cook, you know, nearly makes a call to say, hey, we're going to have to pull out of this fight. Thankfully for really the UFC that did not happen. But, you know, when you watch that fight, there was really never a point where you thought Derek Lewis was really ever going to mount anything. And, you know, you hear Derek Lewis after the fact talked about how they were trying to get this fight to a third round, which really got to kind of question the game plan there. But, you know, you look at Daniel Cormier makes a successful title defense. And I was listening to the Co-Main Event podcast, and they brought up something very interesting. If Daniel Cormier and John Jones's career ended today, who's had the better career?
I mean, Daniel Cormier has had the better experience, obviously. The better experience. I mean, he hasn't been in jail. He hasn't been suspended. His career, I mean, he's well-regarded. The life experience of what DC has done in the MMA, not too bad. Obviously, before MMA, several of hardcore adversity. But if we're asking the question, who has had the better career in terms of who is the better fighter of all time, even though when you ask me the question, who is the greatest of all time, I will not say John Jones because of the drug suspensions. I still will tell you that I think he's had a better career. In that, I still, in my heart of hearts, in my soul, after seeing him beat DC convincingly twice, think John Jones is the better fighter.
Yeah, I do think he's a better fighter, but man, it's kind of hard to not say Cormier just because of, you know, hey, won a 205-pound title, won a 265-pound title. You know, and I was thinking about this, like, if Cormier's career truly ends with heavyweight title defenses against Derek Lewis and Brock Lesnar, like, in a way, I think it almost kind of correlates to how Michael Bisping went after he won the middleweight title, where he necessarily did not fight the top contender. But, you know, DC, I you know, I listen to him talk. I listen to John Jones talk. I just, you tell me as someone who is going to fork down $65 to watch a UFC event in 2019, and if there's one fight that's getting me to the pay-per-view, it is Jones Cormier. I mean, like, if I am Dana White, I am doing whatever I can to make that trilogy matchup. I know DC has talked about retiring when he turns 40, but man, deep down inside of him, there has got to be this part of, like, I got to fight John Jones again. Because if DC goes out and we say this fight with Brock happens in March in Vegas, and somehow maybe him and Jones fight summer of 2019. If DC can beat Jones, I think then the conversation is, how is he not considered the greatest of all time?
If DC beats John Jones, he is absolutely like a major player in the conversation. In that, to me, the conversation is him or George St. Pierre. At this point, he's behind. But if he beats John Jones, he probably is the best of all time, but it's close. Let's not discount what George has done in his career. I mean, that guy is so amazing, and his run was basically stopped by a guy in Johnny Hendricks, who, let's just say, performed a little differently when USADA came into play. I mean, talk about light years difference, and the whole difference in that fight to me was the power of Johnny Hendricks, and that completely derailed his career. Look, if DC beats John Jones, that's when you talk about him being the greatest of all time. He's a part of the discussion, absolutely, and he's sure high up the list. But when you're making that whole deal with greatest of all time, it's like you could easily dismantle the Daniel Cormier case, because in his prime, he wasn't the best in his weight class. In his prime, it was clear John Jones was better. And it's just hard to say Daniel Cormier is the greatest of all time when in his own time, he wasn't even the top guy in the sport or in his own weight class. But if he does beat John Jones, that's when you begin to look at all the other things he's done, unbeaten in the rest of his fights. You mentioned it, a double champion, the win over Derek Lewis. I mean, he completely ran through Derek Lewis. And the thing with Derek Lewis is If he fights Brock Lesnar, that is straight out of the Michael Bisping playbook. I mean, Brock Lesnar at the end of the day is a major draw, but he probably shouldn't be getting a UFC title shot. I mean, to be completely honest with you, it's kind of sad if, if DC fights Lesnar over Jones. But what I'm saying, what I'm about to say is, I think the problem for Cormier is Derek Lewis is still a quote-unquote highly ranked heavyweight. There's just a major difference in the talent in the heavyweight division between the champion and Stipe.
Yeah.
And everyone else. Mm-hmm. I mean, for all intents and purposes, Derek Lewis is right under Stipe if we don't include, you know, Cain Velasquez, who's just, you know, hasn't fought in a very long time. So this heavyweight division just isn't particularly great, but DC did just beat one of his quote-unquote top challengers and completely dismantled him. So, yes, Jason, Daniel Cormier's road to be considered the greatest MMA fighter of all time, there's only one pathway, and it's through John Jones. What is interesting, though, is what if, let's say, John Jones loses to Alexander Gustafsson? Because that could very well be in play. You know Alexander Gustafsson is a tough fighter because he's the one name Daniel Cormier doesn't want. Daniel Cormier is open to fighting Stipe if things don't work out. He wants to fight Lesnar. He wants to fight John Jones. You know who he doesn't want to fight? Alexander Gustafsson. I mean, he said that's the toughest fight he's ever had.
But
what if Gustafsson beats Jones and then Cormier beats Jones? Does that influence the win over Jones, how much it matters if we look at John Jones and he goes out there and loses to Gustafsson prior?
Well, when you look at Cormier and kind of how he wants to end his career, there's a common denominator. It's about where am I going to make the most money. And Alexander Gustafsson is a tremendous fighter, but he does not draw on pay-per-view.
No, he doesn't draw. That's super true. And it's really convenient, too. Because that's what DC – I mean, it's true, man. If you're a businessman, the Stipe fight probably will even do 70,000 to 100,000 more buys than the Gustafsson fight. If you're a businessman, yes. But I think it's convenient for Cormier because, I mean, he's admitted, like, Gustafsson is the toughest guy he's ever fought. People don't like fighting Gustafsson because he doesn't draw and he's going to beat the hell out of you.
I'll tell you this, man. I was watching a little bit of that Stipe interview on Helwani's show on Monday, and I'm liking this new Stipe. I'm kind of like the one quote where Arrow asks questions like, "What do you think about the relationship between Brock and USADA?" He goes, "Oh, they're best friends." I was like, "Oh, that's I love this new Stipe." I mean, because that is part of, you know, the equation is what happens if, you know, let's say I think it's supposed to be March 9th. Is that pay per view? Maybe March 2nd, somewhere one of those two dates. Let's say Brock doesn't make it there. If you're Cormier, do you say, I'll fight Stipe in a rematch? I mean, he's talked about, he does say, you know, Stipe does deserve a rematch. And Stipe should get a rematch when you talk about the amount of title offenses he had where, you know, we haven't seen at heavyweight. Or does he sit there and say, nah, man, nah. John Jones, let's go, buddy. Let's make some money together.
God, that's a good question. I hope it's the latter. I hope it's the latter. I really don't. Even though he's been open to the idea, I don't think we'll see it. I really don't, because I think he only has two destinations, even though he's mentioned Stipe.
I want to go back to something you said about Derek Lewis and saying how he's kind of underneath. I mean, look, we have no idea what's going on with Cain Velasquez. You know, you listen to certain people, it sounds like he's ready to go. Maybe there's some issues there, you know, between him and the UFC. But when you talk about that underneath Cormier, Miocic, and Kane, that next wave, and talking about Derek Lewis maybe sits at the top, I would probably disagree with that a little bit.
Who would you put, Curtis Blaydes?
Yeah. Because, yeah. I mean, and look, we've got the test with Curtis Blaydes is going to be later on this month when he has that rematch against Ngannou. And God knows what Ngannou is at this point. But to me, like, if Cormier was going to be around a year from now, 18 months from now, which we both know highly unlikely that's going to happen. I mean, I think best case scenario, we see two more fights out of Cormier. Maybe we'll only get one more fight. But to me, Curtis Blaydes might be one of the most interesting challenges for Cormier at heavyweight outside of a Stipe fight or a Jones fight.
I mean, when you look at Curtis Blaydes, look at what he did against Overeem and Hunt, Jason. What is it about what he brings to the octagon that you think makes that the most interesting fight?
Well, he washes out the wrestling of Cormier. You know, I mean, you go back to, you know, this past Saturday, Cormier has such a huge advantage in wrestling, and we saw that's really what, you know, we all knew that was his path to victory. To me, and you know, look, do I have question marks about Curtis's stand-up abilities? Yes. But he can
he can, you know, he can wipe the floor clean with the wrestling, be able to stop the takedowns of Daniel Cormier, most likely.
And, like, there isn't a lot of times in DC's career where that's been the case. I mean, this is a guy who, God, he should have represented our country in 2008 for wrestling. So that would be interesting. I do think, man, in that fight, it would be close. And this could be a thing where Daniel's out of the game a year and a half from now. Maybe Curtis is heavyweight champion, and we start saying, man, I wish we had seen that fight for sure. I think the big bugaboo is the fact that I would have loved to have seen – and it wasn't going to happen anyway. But, God, I really would have liked to have seen a Kane versus Daniel Cormier.
Well, and you can see that fight.
I know. If I buy a ticket to San Jose and go to AKA.
Yeah, I mean, look, you can go see that fight any day of the week.
Yeah. You know, have they released that online? Like, have they done videos of that?
No, man, that would be, man, what if AKA just, like, put a compilation video together of just them two sparring and they sold it online for, like, $30. How many people would buy that?
Dude, put it on ESPN Plus, like a lead up to Daniel's last fight.
Yeah.
And it's like, no wonder this guy's always injured. No wonder him and Kane are always injured. They're going to war. I mean, I would love to see apparently on the OAKA, man, freaking, maybe this is just everyone blowing smoke up Herschel's ass, but everyone used to say Herschel Walker wasn't halfway bad in the AKA sparring sessions against some of these greats. Which,
dude, have you seen? Herschel looks amazing. What's he, like 50, 51 years old?
Yeah, man, all these guys doing steroids. All you got to do is eat a bowl of salad every day and do 1,000 push-ups or something. I mean, it not only does it look amazing, it's like apparently his lifestyle is like he eats one meal a day. And maybe that's not real. Maybe it's just one article I read a long time ago. But it's like he eats one meal a day and he doesn't go to the gym or something like that.
No way. You cannot have a body like that and never go to the gym.
He probably,
you know, rarely go to the gym.
I know he values a lot, like body work, like push-ups, crunches, squats, and just do them until you're dead. Like, I think that's at one point in time was his workout style. But
I don't have that workout philosophy.
No, mine is sit. That is my workout philosophy. I mean, me and Derek Lewis, that's one thing we can agree on is sit and a big basket of a big box of Popeye's chicken and kinds of crumbs on my keyboard.
Give me those Popeye's biscuits. Oh
yeah, I'm so glad he got a sponsorship.
Oh yeah, it worked out for him, and we'll see what happens with Derek Lewis. You know, the co-main event of this fight card, a good fight between, you know, Jacare and Weidman. Weidman, I thought, was really doing really well. And then, of course, he gets knocked out there in the third round, which, God, I mean, you got to love the sportsmanship from Jacare there. Jacare's like, dude, he's out. I'm not trying to hit him anymore. And you look at Chris Weidman, and look, I thought he was looking fairly good, but where does he go from here? I mean, this is now a guy that is 1-4 in his last five fights. I mean, we kind of forget the run Chris Weidman had, you know, in becoming the UFC middleweight champion, and then of course, you know, making a couple of title defenses against Anderson, Leota, and Vitor Belfort. I mean, this is a guy that it's almost like he needs to hit a reset on his career in a way. And to me, that reset may be 205 pounds.
I think the 205-pound division is a place in which the talent level isn't there when you look at Rockhold, Romero, and Jacare. So that's where potential is. I don't know if that's going to be a fix-all, though, but it certainly could be for Chris Weidman. I will say, watching this coming event, and man, this was a fantastic fight. It really was a great back-and-forth contest finish. Kind of awkward, for sure, but for Chris, it's like, it's not like he looked completely lost in this fight against a very tippy-top middleweight. It was a top opponent, Jacare Souza. And Chris Weidman won that round big in round one. Mm-hmm. He looked great on the feet against Jacare. And that's something you can take away and think, if he stays the course at middleweight, he can still have success here. He's just got to maintain that composure, and he completely lost it in round two. I mean, that's when the tide turned, I thought. Jacare won two. And then obviously he won round three. So for Weidman, I mean, a lot of times when guys get in these ruts, we can point to other divisions. And for Weidman, we can literally point to a division where the pathway to a title is much, much easier from a skill standpoint. But sometimes that size deal is too big to grasp with. So personally, my advice, Jason, would be to move to 205, just because it's something I think we've been saying for a while. Whether it's Weidman, Rockhold, Romero, for the love of God, if you get yourself out of the lion's pit of middleweight and into the fluffy grounds of 205, you're likely to get a title shot fairly quickly. So that's why I would advise him on that. But I wouldn't be disheartened if he stays at middleweight. And I still think he's going to have plenty of success, just given to what we saw in that first 5 minutes. But if he's not careful, I mean, he might find himself in a position where he's going to be served as the B-side fighter for an Israel Adesanya fight. I mean, I don't know who I would pick in that fight, Weidman versus Adesanya. But obviously, off of the momentum of UFC 230, you're like, Adesanya for sure. But, I mean, that's a close fight, I think.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see what happens with Weidman. Also, the main card, we had Carl Roberson get the decision win over Jack Martian. On the prelims, a couple things stick out to me. First off, shame on Moraes getting the win over Julio Arce. Sajara Eubanks misses weight on Friday. She does go out there and get the win. Obviously, don't see her getting a title shot, following this fight. I think that's probably maybe one of the biggest winners out of UFC 230 is probably Jessica Eye if she gets the win next month, against Caitlin. But to me, for Eubanks, I mean she has, look, for a fighter that I think for the most part was not highly known 2 months ago, she has made a name for herself in the last 2 months.
That's like the new UFC strategy, I think, is just to put people in title fights and take it away and then become stars. Yeah, people care about Sajara Eubanks for sure. And I think we're talking about biggest surprises on this card. One of the biggest surprises is I'm not going to come out here after she missed weight and make fun of her or chastise her. Man, I was all ready when she missed weight. I'm like, oh, my God, this lady. She comes out here, all these complaints on Twitter about not getting the title shot, and she can't even make weight. Mm-hmm. And then I see, like, she's on her period or whatever. I'm like, well, I can't chastise her. Are you kidding me? Don't get me wrong, Jason. I don't know anything about periods.
But, I mean, I think that the issue is we saw a year ago, she's hospitalized, during her weight cut. She's pulled from the tough finale. Now this, I think she's in a situation where I think she just kind of has to prove that making 125 pounds is not a problem, And I think also if you're the UFC, you dodged a bullet, because what if she would have been in the main event against Valentina?
Same date. Would have been the same date. She would not have made weight for sure. I mean, and look, she should not get a title shot off this win. She convincingly beat Roxanne, but you're right. She needs to prove that she can make 126 and then eventually 125. But I will say that, like, if you're a female fighter, I will give you a period card, right? Like if you play, you can play the period card a couple times. One time. If you miss weight, you play the period card, whatever, So I'm like, whatever here. Like, I'm not going to berate her for missing weight here, This was a fight where it wasn't like she chose this date either. It was like, this date came. Oh, I guess she did, didn't she?
Well, I mean, but here's the thing about it, and I think this is, and the reason she's going to, she's received the criticism she has is the way, she's kind of handled herself over the last 2 months. I think she opened herself up to that. Ultimately the question is, she's going to have to fight one more time before a title fight. I think she knows that. I think her manager, Ali Abdelaziz, knows that. She's going to have to prove to the UFC. Now, could I see the UFC maybe look at her and say, we don't think you can make 125 pounds healthy, and we're going to put you at 135 pounds? Yeah, I mean, I think she is probably a fighter that you look at and is most likely stuck in the middle between two weight classes, where, she goes to 135, she's not going to be as big as those girls. And 125 pounds, she does have the size advantage. So, I mean, to me, if there was a 130-pound weight division, she'd probably be ideal for that.
Yeah. I don't know if that one's going to be made, Jason, but I totally agree with you. No, she does find herself. I mean, what if she fights Nico Montano next?
That fight makes sense. Fight makes a ton of sense.
They could bond over how much they think the UFC hates them and the pre-fight hype. Yeah. And Yeah.
Here's the question. Would that be on a main card or prelims?
I don't know. I think it would probably be on the prelims, but if I was the matchmaker, look, I want to create challengers for my titles. I want to create names. And if you're the matchmaker, you put this on a main card. Because theoretically, the winner of this fight, Montano and Eubanks, and you probably don't feel good about putting Montano in the title picture, but at the end of the day, she beats Eubanks after being stripped of the title in a division not littered with challengers. Yeah, the winner of this one gets a title shot. Well, I would put on the main card, but I think it'll be on the prelims.
Hey, look, when you looked at that early on 2019 calendar they put out there with 11 fights between January and March, and it put you on a pace for 44 events. I mean, yeah, it's there's going to be a lot of fights the UFC needs to put together, and we'll see what happens there. But that is UFC 230.
Well, I will say, just to mention, Jason, sorry, just to mention real quick, two impressive performances on the prelims. In addition to Jordan Rinaldi absolutely dominating Jason Knight with his wrestling, Lyman Good knocking out Ben Saunders was super sick. He looked phenomenal there, putting Saunders on Dream Street. And then also Shane Burgos' grappling game was just at a high level there. I mean, he got rocked by Kurt Holleball and snapped on that armbar. I just wanted to mention those two fighters in the prelims really had nice performances.
Yeah, and of course, the UFC does have a card coming on Saturday night, UFC Fight Night 139. We're going to preview that here later on in the podcast. But right now, we're going to get into the interviews. Up first, you're going to hear my conversation with Emmanuel Sanchez, and you'll hear my conversation with Devontae Smith, Julian Arosa, and Nate Smith. We're going to get the interviews kicked off on this week's edition of the MMA Report podcast. I'm now joined by the man that's going to be challenging Patricio Pitbull for the Bellator featherweight title next week in Israel. It is Emmanuel Sanchez. Emmanuel, I was looking at your career, and I noticed your pro debut came back in November of 2011. It's almost going to be exactly, right to the mark of that pro debut. Are you a believer in... I don't know if destiny is kind of the right word, but are you kind of a believer like it's meant to happen because of it's almost the anniversary of your pro debut?
Oh, my man, you better believe it. I'm so excited. I'm so animated. That's just the way the stars happen to align. And I told my coach, Duke Rufus, the same thing, back in July, when before Vichel and Pitbull were going to fight. And I truly believe that's the way it is, man. November 1st, 2008, had my first amateur fight. November 21st, November 2011, had my first pro fight. And now November 16th, or, well, 15th, we're over Israel, 2018. It's been a long time coming, 10 years in the making. But I've worked very hard. I've been very patient. I stayed humble, no call-outs, no trash talks, just working hard and loving life, man, taking everything as a blessing. And I'm so excited to go out there and make my dreams come true.
Of course, we've seen the battles your opponent has had with Daniel Vichel. Of course, you fought Daniel Vichel back in 2016. How would you say you are a different fighter now as opposed to the man that fought Vichel back at Bellator 159?
I'd say a lot of things, man. Mentally, things in training that I changed up. Let's be real. You look back on that. I was, I was still 25 going on 26. So I'm a much different person than I was then than I am now, and that's just, it comes with maturity, man. It really is just a part of life, So looking back on it, I'm glad I lost that fight. I truly don't believe I lost that fight. I truly believe I beat him, but I did. I'm glad I lost, and I had to learn a lot from that. It sucks. It hurts, but you got to learn from it and grow from it, just like Lion King, right? So that's what Master Rafiki told Simba. So I had to learn from it, grow from it, and not run from it. I ran in the fire, put myself in there in those situations, knowing, all right, man, why did this happen? Why did it not go my way? And not just mentally, for the mature side, I guess, and how I've changed things, but on the physical side. I was 25, now I'm 28, so I feel like physically – I'm in a much different place now, too. Obviously, I'm starting to fill out a little more. I'm closer to 30. I'm bigger, faster, stronger. I've made a lot of changes in my health and nutrition. I wouldn't even say diet or weight cut. I'd just say my overall health and nutrition to overall make my performances better in the ring. And also, my performances starts in training. So to perform better in training, to make it better for fight night, it all starts in the gym. So you know, I made those changes. And now I just can't wait to showcase it. I've showcased it the last two times, and now I'm going to showcase it again on November 15th.
Of course, as we're talking, this fight's a little more than a week away. You're going to be traveling out of the United States for, if I believe this is actually the first time you've traveled outside of the States to have a fight. So how does that alter your preparations in terms of, you know, the next 9 to 10 days? I mean, are you going over there early to kind of adjust your body to the time difference?
Yeah, man, I'm sure there's going to be that stuff and, you know, whatever, you know, it's God's holy land though. So I'm a strong man of God. I'm going to go out there and just pray it all away. You know, I'm going to soak it all up. I take everything as a blessing, the good, the bad, the ugly, just loving every second of it. That's all, you know, so I'll just go out there, pray, you know what I mean? Get the sleep I need, get the food I need, get the rest I need, whatever it is. But, we're fighters, man. You know what I mean? You ask anyone in the military, they don't go and say, oh man, I don't feel like going out to war right now. Well, too bad. We're getting bombed. So, you know, time to go make it happen. So, you know, that's the same thing with us. We're fighters. It's not like, hey, man, yeah, I need a sub, or hey, man, I can't play today. We're not players. We're fighters. So when the lights turn on, when it's time to fight, it's time to go. It's time to take care of business. So that's what I'm ready to go out there and do. I've been ready to fight. I've been hungry for my opportunity, and it's time to go make it happen.
How would you say you are similar and different as a fighter in comparison to your opponent?
I think that just brings a lot more to the table, you know. Obviously, he brings a lot to the table, too. But I believe my pressure, my style, I guess you could just say overall swagger, man. Everyone's got it. Everyone's got something different that they bring to the table. And what I bring to the table, he's never seen before, you know, especially because he's fought the same guys over these last couple of years. You know what I mean? Strauss 3 times, Spicer twice, and, you know, only, Corrales and Henderson is different opponents. But, you know, me, I fought a variety of different guys, and each and every guy, you know, has felt my speed, my tenacity, my power. And, yeah, I'm not fast. I'm not a fast guy. I'm not a strong guy. I'm just a guy who's in your face who wants it more. You know, my pressure, my desire, my passion, that's what they feel. And that's, you know, that's the level of my punches. That's the level of my intensity, my tenacity, my ferocity, and everything that ends with the city, man, you know what I just said. So, you know. Just ready to go out there and leave it all on the line and come home with the belt.
When we look at the tell of the tape on this fight, and when we look at your height and reach, you've got a big advantage there. Is that something that people look too much into?
Yeah, I guess. You know what I mean? It's something that's an advantage, you know what I mean? Because, you know, I think it's something also that I use, you know what I mean? There's so many guys out there that have height and reach advantages or whatever kind of advantages, but they don't use it. So I believe fight IQ, that's another thing, you know, that's something that I didn't even mention, but fight IQ is something that I bring that a lot of guys also don't know, you know, that I'm, my ability to be able to fight everywhere. I'm a chameleon. So wherever the fight goes, I go. I'm not uncomfortable anywhere. I can fight everywhere and I can win everywhere. I can dominate everywhere, anywhere and everywhere. So, you know, I'm looking to do just that. Once again, with a different opponent this time. So, you know, the bull is stronger, but the matador is smarter. So time to go out there and prove why I'm better than this man.
In terms of fight IQ, is that something for you that did it take time, or is that something that right when you started fighting, you always kind of had that?
I guess something that I've always kind of had, but it's something I've always taken into consideration since I've never, you know, I just, you know, these past couple of years had Duke Rufus before, you know, I was on my own and, you know, I never really had a head coach, you know, I was my own coach. I was my own manager. I had to find my own training, et cetera. So now that I have someone who, you know what I mean, helps me with my fight IQ, but that's something that I've always kept in mind in my back pocket. So because before I had him, I had to know, I had to realize, oh man, kicks hurt, punches hurt. Oh man, this strike hurts. Oh, this doing this grappling hurts. You know, that's not something that can be taught. You know, because, yeah, anyone can be taught a jab cross, a low kick, a middle kick, a spin kick. You know what I mean? All that stuff can be taught. But I think what I do in the ring, not even just, I guess, heart and determination, but the little things that you see, they can't be taught. You know, that's not something that someone goes and says, all right, guys, today we're going to practice this. Or, you know, for example, the Showtime kick. That's not just something that I'm sure anyone just goes and says, hey, guys, all right, we're going to practice kicking off the fence today and doing this. So that's something that you go and see that my creativity, you know, my keep staying open-minded. You know, I'm not a wrestler. I'm not a kickboxer. I'm not a jiu-jitsu guy. I am all of these things mixed in one, and I can do it all. You know, keep the white belt, St. Pierre mentality. I can learn anything from anyone at any time, and I'm always open to learn. I'm always open to try something different, a different grip, a different takedown, a different technique, et cetera. You know, I use what I can and whatever I can, so I'm not going to say that, oh, I'll throw it away. I know how to defend it. That's another problem that people have, too. They might say, ah, this kick doesn't work. This sucks. Or, oh, man, no, that's not my style, this and that. All right, that's great if it's not your style, but you also got to know how to defeat it. You got to know how to beat it. What if someone tries to do that to you, you know? So you got to be ready for anything and everything that what could potentially happen in the ring. So that's the kind of person I am. That's the kind of mindset that I bring. And I show it each and every time that I go in there and I fight.
Is there one piece of advice Duke has given you that you have found yourself sharing with up-and-coming fighters?
I guess that's the key thing. Is stay open-minded, listen to your coaches, work hard, enjoy training, man. You know, I guess not be hard-headed, not be stubborn, you know. Be like, coach, oh, man, you know, I hate this kick. Or, oh, coach, no, this jab, it doesn't work, blah, blah, blah. You have to make it work. That's the problem. Too many people are X's and O's and, oh, man, I got to do this, I got to do that. This takedown's got to be perfect, this got to be perfect. You just got to fight, you know what I mean? There's this thing called outfighting somebody. You know, I'm not an athlete. I'm not a tactician. You know, I do have my tactics. I do have my techniques. But, you know, there's a fine line between being technical and then also just going out there and outfighting somebody. You just got to want it more, you know. And I think I show that and I prove that in my fights. I just want it more. So I'm excited to go out there and do that again against another tough fighter.
If you had to label one key to victory against Patricio and become the Bellator featherweight champion, what would that be?
Key to victory is just stay on him. That's it. You know what I mean? Leave no doubt and don't let up. I think that's the problem that people have is they're waiting to see what happens to them. You know what I mean? You know, like they hit and they're like, oh man, is he going to punch back? So, of course he is. Why wouldn't he? So, you know, for me, I don't wait to see what happens in there. I'm not a guy to, you know, that gauge timing and this and that. I create my openings. You know, if I want this kick, I make this kick happen. If I want this punch, I make this punch happen. And if it's not there, then all right, man, on to the next move. You know, that's part of being a good martial artist, of being a good fighter. And, you know, that's just something that jiu-jitsu teaches you, wrestling teaches you, martial arts in general teaches you. You know, if ABC doesn't work, there's DES, and then on and on and on. And, you know, and if none of the letters work, all right, now we go to numbers. None of the numbers work, all right, now let's try something else. There's, you know, never give up, never quit. I got a lot of tricks, and I'm willing to use them all. But if I don't have to, then I won't.
And everyone's going to be able to watch this fight come on Friday night, November 19th at 9 p.m. Eastern Time on the Paramount Network. Also be streamed on DAZN. Emmanuel, I appreciate time. Good luck in the fight. Let all my listeners know where they can follow you out on social media and let them know who some of your sponsors are that are helping support you, man.
Long list of sponsors, but I keep my circle small and strong. The people have been with me since the beginning and they love me and believe in me and they know I can't wait to bring the belt home for them. And, they know that I will bring the belts home. Rufus Board, Duke Rufus Strike University, Unparalleled Greatness, CrossFit, Milwaukee, Combat Corner, Grip, Mouth Guard, Diamond MMA Cup, Freshman, Pokey, you know, Wisconsin Athletic Club. I love everybody. And you can follow me at El Matador 145 at Twitter and at Matador Sanchez on Instagram. Peace and love to everyone. God bless. You know, I appreciate everybody. People, the doubters, haters, lovers, you know, each and every person, I hold a special place in my heart for all of you. So I appreciate everybody. You take everything as a blessing. So God bless.
Joining me now here on the MMA Report is a man that's going to be fighting on Saturday night, UFC Fight Night 139. Be able to see his fight, the opening fight of the TV prelims on FS1. Devontae Smith makes his official UFC debut. Devontae, man, I appreciate the time. This thing is the story. I know you've done other interviews, kind of talk about how it's come together. How would you describe the last 2 weeks?
Hectic, confusing, and now, I want to say blissful, exciting, and I'm just ready to shine.
And, of course, taking on Julian Arosa has been in the UFC. This is his return to the UFC. I mean, were you familiar with Julian before, you know, kind of going back and forth with your manager and coach on who potentially the opponent could be?
No, not at all. Truthfully, it was more of a like I said before, we were going to actually give up on the Denver card if we didn't get a fight that Tuesday. And that, I'm sorry, the dog. But we were going to give up on Denver that Tuesday. So it was like Tuesday night when I got a call from my manager saying, you know, where's Mark? We got to a fight. Everybody keeps turning me down. And he was like, the guy's name is Julian Rosa. And I was just like, shit, I'll fight him. Like, you know, I've been training so long for a fight. Nothing like specifically, but yeah, I just needed to fight. I wanted to fight. And, you know, thank him for, you know, I give much respect to him for even accepting a fight, which many people have declined.
When you hear about multiple fighters declining to fight you, is that a compliment? Does that piss you off? What kind of goes through your mind when you hear there's guys being offered a fight and they're saying no?
I guess it's a compliment, and then it irritates me at the same time, because it's like, you know, in a sense, y'all already got money. You know, y'all already got your feet wet. Y'all already here. You know, it's my turn now. You know, it's my time to shine. It's my turn to show what I can do. And for you people, especially the ranked guys, for you people to, you know, turn me down, like, are you scared or do you see me too much of a threat? But, you know, the longer what kept me calm is the thought process was, the longer they take, the better I become. You know, you're just giving me more time to work on more things. And, you know, it kept me at a good temperament, you know, until, you know, I got the fight. So we're good now.
Now, do you view this as your official UFC debut, or do you look at the Contender Series fight as really your UFC debut?
I mean, how everybody acting. I see the Contender Series as my official UFC debut, but I'm just happy and blessed that, like, it's not just a regular, I'm not going to call it a regular show, but it's like I'm on the 25th anniversary, you know, and they saying that the first UFC was here in Denver. And it's just it's a great feeling. I'm just like, I'm ready to shine. I'm ready to show the world and do me and get the win.
Now, I know for your fans out there, I saw this on your Facebook that you have some King Cage t-shirts. So how can the fans get if they want to support you, how do they get that t-shirt?
I gotta make some more, you know, tell the truth, because they went faster than I thought they would. So I gotta go back and get some more made. I'm thinking about doing hoodies now because the winter time is pretty much here. But once I get that handled, I'll put a link up and everybody will know.
Now I don't know if you know this, you are the betting favorite to end this one, almost a 3-1 betting favorite. When you hear that, what sticks out to you about that?
Oh, yo, the truth, nothing too much. I don't think too much about stuff like that, because it's like unnecessary pressure. You know, not even pressure, just unnecessary thought. You know, because even if I was like the underdog, I still wouldn't care. You know, I would still do what I do. So I really don't pay attention to that. Somebody told me that I was a favorite. There was no change in my life, in my soul, my heart. It was just like, oh, you're the favorite. Oh, that's cool. And I just, you know, like, oh, that's cool. It's a good feeling, but again, I give much respect to Julian Rosa. You know, I'm not underestimating him in any way, shape, or form. I'm going to take him out like I take anybody out. I'll fight him like he's the champion of the UFC or whatever. You know, I keep saying, I just do what I do best, and that's win.
Now, you mentioned about pressure. What do you consider pressure?
I don't know. And tell the truth. Reason being, because when I was younger, pressure was what other people thought, you know, of my skill set. You know, oh, he's not a good wrestler. Oh, he just likes to stand up. Or his jiu-jitsu. Or he does this. Or he does that. But as I got older and became more into myself as a fighter and as a person, I don't care what people think. You know, I really don't. Nobody really knows what I'm, other than my team and my coaches, nobody really knows what I'm working on. They know what I show you. So you can think my wrestling is subpar. You can think my jiu-jitsu is subpar. You can just think I'm still a stand-up guy. I don't care, because I just don't. Because I constantly kept proving people wrong to the point that I'm like, what I need to prove people wrong anymore for? You know? Like, I don't want to bring up Joe Lowry, but, like, again, I was underdog for him. He was 8-0, CSSC champion, V3 champion, and, you know, he had all these things stacked up with him, and I took him out like he was nothing. You know, like an amateur. You know, so I don't care what other people think. So there's no pressure at all. Absolutely no pressure.
I always live by the mindset of I can't worry about things that I don't control. And that's what I kind of get from what you're saying. It's like, look, there's things out there that people are going to say things, do things, but I can't control about it, so why am I going to sit there and stress about it?
Right. Exactly.
You know, and it's just, but I mean, obviously, this is fight week, and I appreciate you doing this here during fight week.
Yeah, cool.
I mean, it's essentially a hometown, you know, where you train at, hometown fight. I mean, so will you do the normal fight week, like if you were traveling somewhere, being in the hotel, or do you stay at home and you're just going to show up to the arena on fight night?
You know what? My fight week ritual kind of switched up. What I used to do, I used to go to the mall and just buy clothes and shoes and look like fresh, clean, whatever. And now, I mean, you know, from my experience with the Lowry fight, being in Vegas, being around James Krause, you know, a veteran in the UFC, and just getting his mindset, you know, and just now it's just like enjoying the moment, you know, like there's no, oh my gosh, I'm about to fight in a UFC car. Like, it's not that I don't care. It's just like, it's just another day. Like, I'm just enjoying being alive. I'm enjoying looking at my growth. I'm enjoying, you know, just being here and being blessed, because there's many people who want to be here that's not here, and I'm just taking it all in. And you know, on fight day, I'm like, I'm more so thinking about what song I want to walk out to. Like, I'm just like, that's stuff I'm thinking about. Like, I'm just enjoying myself, man, because at the end of the day, it's just a fight. I've been doing this since I was 18, because I couldn't fight till I was 17, but been doing this since I was 18. I'm 25 now. It's really just another day, you know. And each time I fight, I'm gonna get better and better. You know, I won't come in the same. You know, I train to improve. So,
I was gonna ask you about the walkout song. Now, are we at the stage where like you're down to like the 3 or 4 songs left, or you got like 20 songs in your mind?
I don't even have a song yet. I have so many songs in my head and I'm listening to, because it's like I'm thinking about coming out to like Meek Mill, Dreams and Nightmares. But that was only because my dude was like, you should come out to that. I'm like, bro, that's going to make me fight. I don't need no extra motivation. Like, I'm good. I know I got this fight. I listen to that, you know, the piano start playing and I'm like, hold on, wait a minute. And I'm like, get too hyped. I don't want to get too hyped. So I'm also thinking about, I'm rambling. But I'm also thinking about coming out to Gucci Mane, Wake Up in the Sky, because it's not too like amp you up. It just makes you feel smooth, you know, just like you mellow and you feeling yourself, you know. What's his guy name? Israel, the last Stylebender.
Adesanya, yeah.
Yeah, he came out to that Lil Duval. I ain't gonna cuss, but the smile thing. And, you know, it's just like everybody got that different mood they want. And I just want a smooth, mellow feeling yourself, because I know I got this. I know I will win. And what's the point of overdoing things when you know you got it? You feel me? So,
have you ever thought of like having just like one song, like when that song hits the speakers, they know you're walking out, like, you know, you think of Anderson Silva, DMX comes on, you know, Anderson's walking to the cage. Uriah Faber, another one. You knew when, you know, California Love came on, that was Uriah Faber. Vanderlei and Sandstorm. You know, there's certain songs that are synonymous with fighters. Have you ever thought about just having like that one song? So like, you know, for, you know, when you're fighting, you know, 3, 4, 5 years from now, that song comes on, we know you're walking out.
Like a brand song.
Yeah.
Like, I have, but it's like life changes, you know? So maybe this fight, I feel very confident. I'm there all the way. you know, so I don't want to be motivated. But let's say 4 or 5 years down the road, I have a situation where the guy is just talking and, you know, and it's actually starting to hurt my nerves. Maybe I want a different song to, you know, to let it be known that no one can save you. You know, it's a whole different story. So whatever song I play, I feel like people should, like, really listen to the lyrics, because I don't just throw a song on just because it's popular or just because it's in, which is the same thing. But it's what I'm going through right now. You know, it's what my mind is, you know, going through. It's how I'm feeling. So I've thought about it, but nah. Or like Floyd Mayweather, how he got the rappers to make him a song. Money to get. But I think when I choose songs, it really goes with the training camp, like what I've been through for the 2-3 months in, you know, in my life. So.
Now, I know, obviously, you're on TV prelims on FS1, 8 p.m. Eastern time on Saturday night, 5 p.m. out there on the West Coast. If we get the post-fight interview in the cage, are we expecting to hear kind of what your thoughts are or what you want next?
You know what? Yeah, I'll say that, because I got to sit down with my coaches and be like, so what's next? But, like, again, you know, a lot of people keep telling me, call out Gunther and this and that. But, you know, I don't feel like he's going to fight me, man. You know, so I'm looking for bigger and better things. I'm moving forward. But once we get a name, you know, I'd rather call a guy out and, like, that I want you. You know, if they don't give me you, just know they're going to give me you in the future. So.
Would you be shocked if Gunther called you out?
Yes. 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 You know, he don't want that work. He don't want that work. And, you know, I'm a whole nother fighter than what I was when I was however old I was at that time. Whole different. Like, if he wanted to just keep come straight, Oh my God. He's the one with the problem. So, but if he asks, I'll take it most definitely. But I'm not about to be chasing him. So when I get a name, and when me and my coaching staff and manager crew, when we get a name, and, you know, like, I like to make smart moves, you know, I'll call that person out.
And of course, we're all going to have to watch on Saturday night to see how your fight goes, how that post-fight interview goes, and all that. As always, man, I appreciate the time. Let everyone know they can follow you out on social media. Your sponsors, the floor is yours, man.
Okay. My Instagram and my Twitter, they're the same thing. It's K_O_E_KINGKAGE. I'm going to give a big shout out to Turf House, Beast Coast Unlimited, Maha Cryo, Quest. Let me think. I believe that's it. For real. I'm looking around. Lace and Loop. I'm looking around my room right now. I appreciate everybody, especially my sponsors, everybody who has been a big help for me, everybody who believes in me, everybody who didn't believe in me. You know, thanks.
Joining me now here on the MMA Report, a man that's returning to the UFC this weekend, UFC Fight Night 139, as he takes on Devontae Smith. This Julian Arosa. Julian, I appreciate the time. How would you describe the past 2 years for you, this journey back to the UFC? I mean, can you sum it up in a couple words?
You know, maybe a little bit more than a couple of words, but, you know, it's been up and down, I guess I'd say, you know, but I never lost sight of, you know, following my dream of, you know, just being a better martial artist. You know, I figured if I put the work in, it would come, and moving to Vegas helped me, you know, put more and more work into it. And then also, you know, I learned moving to Vegas that I need good representation on top of my skills. So, I had switched over to, you know, management with Jason House at Iridium Sports, and, which is actually who's Devontae's manager as well. But you know what? I talked to, you know, Jason about it, and he said, you know, he didn't want to get us, you know, get in the way of chasing our dreams. And so if we had to fight each other, we had to fight each other. You know, it's all business anyways. I beat up some of my best friends in the gym on a daily basis. So it means nothing. You know, we're going to go in there, handle business. And afterwards, we can go get a beer. Or we can, you know, be friends afterwards. But business in the cage and then friends afterwards.
Yeah, it's kind of knowing kind of the timeline of how this kind of all works out. You signed with Jason just, what, you know, 10 days ago or so, and literally you get this phone call. I mean, it's in preparing for a short notice fight, what's the pros and the cons for you?
You know, I think one of the pros is, you know, obviously being somebody who's willing to take a short notice fight, you have to always stay relatively ready. You know, you can't let yourself get out of shape. You can't get too big on weight. Luckily for me, I can also make featherweight, and that's where I really want to be, is featherweight. But so 55 is easy for me to make. I can make that in a day's notice. And so weight is easy for me, but I also stay pretty ready. And so I would say I train about 80% of what I would on a fight camp, outside of fight camp as well. And also, I just got off Contenders, and I know that you know, a lot of guys who don't get signed off Contenders, who do as good as I did on Contenders, usually will get a short notice fight. So I was already kind of thinking I might have a short notice fight with that. But as the months pass, it's like, you know, it gets more and more frustrating, because it's been almost 4 months since my Contenders fight. So, you know, I was thinking, after knocking out Jamal Emmers, I was like, man, there's got to be, you know, they got to be calling me soon, man. I head kick knocked this dude out, like, spectacularly, like, against a super tough opponent. And I was already in the UFC, so they got to, like, you know, they got to do something. Something's got to happen. And it wasn't happening. It wasn't happening. It wasn't happening. So basically, I had to get my my kicks off of just training hard, you know, sparring. Every Tuesday is our sparring days, Tuesdays and Thursdays. And those I treat like fights, man. I go in there with the mentality of, you know, trying to, you know, win those matches. You know, obviously, like, I'm not trying to, like, kill my partners, but, you know, that's where I get my, you know, that's where I get my kicks for the week, you know, because I had no fights I was getting ready for. So I was just training.
You know, in talking to Devante, he had told me, he's like, you know, multiple guys had turned this fight down. As you have kind of, you and your coaches have been, you know, cramming for this fight of what Devante does the best. Why do you think people turn the fight down against him?
Well, I heard some higher level guys in the UFC turn the fight down. And I understand that, on a sense of it's a kind of a lose-lose situation for other solidified UFC guys to fight a guy off Contenders, right? Because if Devante loses against a guy who's already solidified in the UFC, that's what's supposed to happen, right? You know, but if Devante beats a guy that's already solidified in the UFC, that's not necessarily supposed to happen. You know, Devante's going to be an underdog against any of those guys. So any of those guys taking the fight is not really smart on their part, especially short notice, you know, because Devante has the exact ability to ruin a solidified UFC guy. You know, having that type of power, you know, you really have to avoid that, and you have to take him into deep waters. And, you know, a lot of veterans could beat him, but they don't want to take the risk of it on a short notice fight. You know, a guy like Dariush, I think, got offered the fight and he declined it, but Dariush's last fight was a debuter, short notice, who got knocked out by Alex Hernandez. So if that happened again to him by a guy, Devante, he might be cut from the UFC. You never know, you know, like, you know, to lose by two debuters in a row, I mean, that could be really bad on someone's resume, especially a guy like Dariush, who's, like, you know, top 10 in the world, you know? And so I think that's why those guys, you know, declined that fight. I think Devante is stylistically a decent matchup for me, because he's more of a traditional striker. I'm really unorthodox, and I pride myself on my cardio and taking people into deep water. And but I have nothing to lose too, you know. Me and Devante are finding our way back in the UFC, and I'm fighting my way back in the UFC. I mean, but you know, I feel like I'm still debuting. I feel like I didn't get a good run in the beginning of it all, and so I feel like this is kind of almost a debut for me as well, because it's been so long. And so I think for me and him, it's like we have nothing to lose. We just have nothing. We have nothing but you know, just the ability to go out there and just give it everything we have and hope, you know, hope for the best.
Do you look at the fight game any differently now as opposed to your earlier stint in the UFC?
For sure. I think, being cut from the UFC and going through that has made me feel as if, like, I legitimately have nothing to lose now. Like, back then it was like, oh, I'm in the UFC. Oh, I gotta, like, treat it like I'm, you know, carrying around like an egg in my hand and I can't drop it, you know. But like now it's like, you know, I've already been there. I've had the worst thing happen to me. I got knocked out on one of the biggest cards in the world when Diaz beat McGregor. I was on the undercard and I got knocked out by Teruto Ishihara and then got cut from the UFC. So that's literally the worst thing that could possibly happen as a fighter, is getting knocked out in front of all your friends, all your family and everybody in the world on a big card like that. And then, and then to also get cut from the UFC. So for me, it's like I have nothing to lose. I've, you know, and I've already accepted the possibilities of being able to, you know, I've been knocked out and, you know, life still goes on. So it's like, you know, once you get that stuff, you know, once you've already accepted that stuff in your head, you can go out there and perform 100% and not worry about it. If it you know, you always got to understand that there's possibilities of anything happening. You know, there's a possibility I could walk across the street and get hit by a car, but, you know, I'm not going to stress about it every single day. So just like with fighting, you know, there's a possibility I'm going to go and lose this fight, but I'm not going to stress about it every day. I'm just going to get it. You know, I'm just going to go in there and perform 100% to my abilities and, you know, trust in my training and my ability. And, you know, if I lose, that's always a possibility, but I don't want to, I'm not going to make it a possibility for me to, on that night in my head.
I know every fighter's got some type of motivation. Is part of a motivation for this fight the fact that you're a 2-1 betting underdog? I mean, does that come into your mindset at all?
That's just, it's so weird to me that I'm an underdog. I mean, I have like three times as many fights as this kid, and I've beat some of the toughest dudes in the world, and I was in the UFC. It's just mind blowing that I'm an underdog like that. But shoot, Jamal Emmers, I was a 2.5-1 underdog on that fight, which was absolutely nonsense in my head. But, you know, that doesn't bother me at all. Actually, that makes it better for me because I know a lot of people that want to bet money on me because they know who I am and they've watched me train all the time. So it's more of a lucrative bet for them. I think, you know, even with me, when I fought Jamal Emmers on the contenders fight and there was a 2.5-1 underdog, I was like, even if I lose, it's a good bet. I feel like I should beat that kid like 9 times out of 10 myself. So like, I mean, I regardless if I win or lose, I think it was a great bet. And especially even for this fight, if I'm a 2-1 underdog, I mean, it doesn't necessarily give me more motivation, but it takes takes the edge off a little bit for me. I mean, it makes him feel like he might have more pressure on him because he's supposed to win maybe, but I just I don't know who these matchmakers are. They must not be like MMA dudes because I have like three times as many fights as this guy. Like I'm literally one of the best featherweights in the world. And just because I'm fighting up a weight class against a guy who's got power doesn't mean he should be the favorite. I mean, I don't even know how many amateur fights he has. I had 10 amateur fights, which is more than a lot of people. So altogether, I have 37 fights. And he's got 9 pro fights. I don't know how many amateurs, but I have so much more experience than this guy. And I've been there. I've been at the big lights. You know, I fought in the Ultimate Fighter house 4 times. And I did the contenders in that same house. So I fought in front of Dana White 5 times. And just in those, and not to mention the 2 UFC fights that I had walking out, fighting in front of all, you know, everybody, you know, on national television and all that stuff. So like, I've been through all the motions and, you know, that's a tough thing to get. That's a tough thing to reenact before your fight, to understand how it's going to feel to be in the UFC, you know, to walk out in front of everybody, to see Joe Rogan, to see Dana White, you know, to see all those people and to understand that, you know, it's not like a regional show. It's, you know, there's a lot that goes into that.
Fighting on the Contender Series and the Ultimate Fighter, I mean, I've talked to other guys about this. They'll talk about just it's just a unique scene. It's like nothing else you can get ready for. I mean, some guys will say it's like you feel like you're just having a gym fight. For you, as someone who now has done multiple fights there, how would you describe it?
Yeah, you know, it has like – there's 2 different ways about it. You know, when you first do that, like the first, you know, Ultimate Fighter fight that I had, I was like, oh my God, Dana White's sitting right there. I can see him. I can see Sean Shelby. I can see all the, you know, see all the people that, you know, are in the huge organization, the UFC organization. But it definitely has that gym, like gym vibe, you know, because there's only so many people in there. It's a small group of people there watching. So once you get past the fact that Dana White's there and like, you know, certain guys are there, once you get past that fact, it does feel like a smaller show. It feels like one of those small, like amateur shows you're at or whatever. And so it kind of takes the edge off. And so there is a big difference between, you know, obviously that to a UFC fight as well. So, but I definitely get that like little gym feel because most of the guys that are there are either on either side of, you know, you got family from one side and family from the other side. And then for me, when I was on Contenders, I had a lot of people because I, you know, train out of Vegas. So I had a lot of guys from my gym there. So it was like, it was almost like I was just there sparring, you know. I had all my gym friends there, I had my coaches there. So it was just similar to be, you know, just a sparring in the gym for me.
What would you, in terms of this fight on Saturday night, what would you say is one of the keys to victory for you?
Most definitely one of the keys for victory for me is, first and foremost, I have to avoid his power right off the bat. You know, I have to avoid his power. I have to be moving all the time. I can't stop staying, you know, I can't stay in front of him. Anytime anybody's stayed in front of him, they've gotten, you know, they've gotten TKO'd or KO'd. And then what's also important on top of that is being evasive, but I also need to take him into deep water. He's only been past the second round like three times, I think, and that's where he got one of his losses. And one of the losses that he had against Gunther, yeah. And so, I mean, he almost knocked Gunther out. And so I think he overexerted himself because he almost knocked him out and then ended up, I think, kind of giving up in that fight. I mean, he got to a point where he wasn't really defending anymore. He's almost like just covering up and letting the fight be stopped. And so I think that's going to be obviously one of the keys to victory. My ground game is really good and really underrated because no one ever sees me take anybody down or really get, I mean, I'm more of a striker, but my ground game is, you know, really phenomenal as well. So, and I don't have the same type of top pressure as a guy like Gunther has, but if I do get Devontae in the later rounds, I think that I can get on top of him and get a finish just like Gunther did.
And, of course, everyone's going to have to tune in on Saturday night on the TV prelims on FS1, 8 p.m. Eastern Time, 5 p.m. Pacific Time to see the fight. It'll be the first fight on the TV prelims. Really appreciate time. Appreciate you taking time out here on Fight Week. I know it's a busy week, so I appreciate you taking some time out. Let everyone know they can follow you out on social media, and shout out your sponsors, man.
Yeah, no worries, man. I appreciate you you know, putting me on here as well. You can reach me on Instagram, JulianRosa3. Facebook, Julian Rosa. I got my fan page, Juicy J. And then my sponsors, since I just moved over with Jason, I don't have very many sponsors right off the bat, but RDX, Fight Gear, and then Herbally Grounded as well. They were a previous sponsor that I had with my older management. But yeah, I just like want to, you know, thank all my coaches, my friends and family, and obviously I want to thank Devontae for taking this fight and on short notice because I'm not an easy matchup for him as well. So I appreciate him, you know, letting me step up for this fight to get back in the UFC.
Joining me now here on the MMA Report is a man who moved to 3-0 at the end of last month. Trains out of Factory X there in Colorado. It is Nate Smith. Nate, man, I appreciate time. As we were getting this interview set up, and I was looking at you know, kind of your journey in martial arts, you know, going on Tapology, going on mixedmartialarts.com. You know, they have 20 fights. You told me prior we started, it's actually more than 20 fights. You know, why such a long amateur career? I guess that's the first thing, because, you know, 10 always seems to be kind of the number that people stick out. But for you, it was much more than that.
Well, I, at the very beginning, I was just throwing myself, you know, with the wolves pretty early without actually having an official gym to train at. And don't get me wrong, I was winning some and I was losing some, but the fights wasn't smart, you know, per se. And I was seeing a bunch of amateurs constantly, you know, turn over. And I was like, I don't think that's going to end well for them. So I was seeing the negative backlash from that. And then having a bunch of, you know, UFC fighters that have been around me from like Johnny Hollywood Case. I fought for his uncle's promotion as well. You know, Josh Neer, Houston Alexander, Anthony Smith, so on and so forth. A lot of these guys been, you know, showing me the right path and making sure I've been doing the right things correctly, to the point where I end up getting an official gym. Originally started training out of Justin Pfeiffer Lake out at Fort Dodge, Iowa, was affiliated with Jackson Winks Gym in Albuquerque. So once I kind of start, you know, putting myself in there, I've been sticking with the blueprint. I was like, all right, I got to be 100% in this. Either do it as an actual career, not just a sport or a hobby, or don't do it at all. And it was just my transition from wrestling to MMA. So once I built that confidence and kept fighting as an amateur and building up wins, I was like, okay, I'm feeling good, but at the same time, I have to make sure that I'm fully ready. And I did get offers to end up turning pro early, but I was like, no, I'm not 100% confident in everything. I need to make sure there's no holes, period. So once I reached the last, my last amateur fight, I was just like, you know what? I'm done. I'm ready. Let's get after it. And here I am now sitting perfectly at 3-0 and against guys that, you know, some top flyweight prospects like Jeff Molina out of James Krause's gym. And then you got Keegan Blanco coming out of the Midwest as well. And then you got Justin Parker coming out with Justin Gaethje's game. gym, and I've been over there with my uncle Carrington Banks before, so they kind of they was aware of how I am and who I was, because they were like, "Are you Emmy or pro?" They're trying to figure it out, you know. But yeah, man, once I got confidence in myself in every aspect, I wasn't worried. I'm not scared anymore. No butterflies. It's just another stage, another person that's in my way.
That's what they always say. The most dangerous athlete is the confident athlete. You want to find the athlete that's not confident. I mean, it doesn't matter what we're talking about, fighting, baseball, basketball, football, whatever it may be, you have to be confident. I mean, do you like, was it just like an immediate light switch for you where you just kind of got that confidence, or was it something that it just, it was a piece here, piece there, and so on and so forth?
It was more of pieces, getting everything together, getting like a puzzle, getting everything together, connecting the dots and everything else. And then once I was like, okay, I get the picture, you know, once I put the puzzle pieces together, I get the big picture. I'm like, all right, cool. So I already know what to do. I already have the blueprint. I'm just sticking with it because I already got the foundation laid out for me and shown to me and what to do and what not to do. And of course, everybody have to learn their lessons, so on and so forth. And, you know, on certain things when they don't listen, I have as an amateur. I did all my negatives as an amateur. There shouldn't be no excuse for me as a pro, hands down. That's how confident I am in my skill and attribute, no matter where it goes.
So you mentioned about, you know, training in Iowa, but you're now in Colorado. What led you to this path to where you realize Colorado is where you need to be?
After I got a little bit more in deep with the MMA world as a mixed martial artist, I ended up moving to Omaha, Nebraska, training with Danny Molina at Skywalker 101. And that's kind of where I met Scott Moore and Anthony Smith. And I was during the time linking up with Houston Alexander and a couple of old UFC heads, you know, that knows the right things, that been there since, you know, when UFC didn't have no rules, especially Scott Moore. That man is a scary individual. But, you know, having these tough guys in the room, man, and, you know, showcasing my skills, they knew what kind of level of wrestling I am and where I come from with my background with that. They're like, okay, so we're going to have to, you know, pick it up a notch, take it up a little bit more. So when it came to that, I made that decision because I came out here before, trained with Factory X, getting ready for my first pro debut. And I love the environment. I love the, it's nothing but killers in the room. And I was like, you know, it was going to be a matter of time. Discussed it with both of my coaches, and they were good with it because we all are on good terms because they come over to Factory X as well. So, and I split my camps over there as well. So it was just a matter of time for me to transition. And once I came over here, I polished up a little bit more things. It wasn't where Mark Montoya wanted to, you know, change me. It's just more of improving on the areas and aspects of little things. Polishing up, adjusting, just isn't as easy for me to adjust. So that's what kind of made me transition from, you know, from Iowa to Nebraska to Colorado.
Yeah, speaking of Nebraska, we can see the sweatshirt Victory Fighting Championships, where that's where your first two fights were. And yes, and of course, both those come by decision. So going into your last fight, was there all kind of a chip on your shoulder? Like, man, I got to get the stoppage victory.
I wouldn't say a chip. It was in my mind, like in the back of my mind, but I wasn't too focused on like just finishing the guy. I was focused on working on the things I've been doing in the room. It's not many guys that, you know, fight like they train, and I do that. I the exactly same way how I train and I continue to improve in the room is the exact same way I was fighting, you know, fighting the cage, which make it difficult for my opponents because every fight they can go off to all old film and it still won't help them. So every time it's entirely different me, and it just I have yet to reach my peak, and that's what makes me a very dangerous flyweight around.
So if the peak is a 10 on a scale of 1 to 10, where are you at right now?
If you want to say that, I want to say right now I feel like I'm at a like a in between like a 5 or a 6, you know, 5.5 type of deal. Only reason I say that because I'm still learning, I'm still growing, and that's what kind of makes me more dangerous, make it seem like I'm that shows that more veteran type of attribute when I'm out there, where you got guys even in the early prime, you know, some of them counter strikers, some of them, you know, just being on the offense, just straight ahead, nonstop. You know, you got guys that just like to work the outside. Me, I like to work everywhere. I'm end up taking my shots. I'm end up taking it down, work my clinch, get my boxing, kickboxing, get my Muay Thai in. And if we get to the ground, it's a whole nother level with me, especially since I'm comfortable on my back. I'm a blue belt, considerably a blue belt with my wrestling pedigree, because you can't out scramble me. That's for sure. I wrestle with some of the toughest guys around the world, and there's nothing you can do to match that level. And even if you have good defense, it's not gonna help you. I'm gonna still be on you. You better move your head. You better move your feet. I don't know what else to tell you. You better have God on your shoulder to protect you, because I'm gonna hurt you.
You mentioned about being a flyweight fighter. We have all seen what has transpired here over the past, you know, 2 weeks or so with Demetrius Johnson, you know, essentially being released from his contract, you know, one championship signing. I mean, it's a quote unquote trade, but really what it is being released and allowed to sign somewhere else. For you, as and the UFC has not come out and said exactly what their plans are long term wise, 125. I think a lot of people are kind of have that perception that maybe those days are coming to an end. For you as a fighter, is that a conversation that you have had with your management and with your coaches of, you know what, do we maybe need to start thinking about adding on some weight and going up to 35?
No, not quite. Whatever they tell me, you know, I'm going to do it, because this, anyway it goes, I cut down to 25. I'm a humongous 25 pounder. So I would be considered an average 35 pounder anyway. And yes, I would try to put on a little bit more muscle just to, you know, compete and match a little bit more with these guys in the strength. Cause I fought and trained with guys that, you know, that at bantam weight, and they're huge. But at the same time, I can move them just as much as I can move the flyweights. You know, I can hurt them just as much as the flyweights. But the only issue is, it's not that many bantamweights around that can keep up with my speed as well, you know, that would be able to try to force their will upon me. You see what I'm saying? So, as far as bantamweight, hey, wherever. If the UFC keeps it, cool. I'm standing at 25 and feel dominant at 25. If I'm, you know, if push comes to shove, bantamweight it will be. And I don't know what else to tell everybody else, but they just got to be aware, because if I go up, everybody's going to be like, okay, Nate Smith at bantamweight now. So we're going to have to make some adjustments to things. I want people to feel that way. I want them to know that I'm that dangerous, where they have to adjust their own things for me to prepare for me. Where I'm not even really thinking about them. I'm just taking my time. You're just going to get in my way. I'm going to eliminate you out the way. Plain and simple.
I mean, while you've only had three professional fights, you've been doing this for a long time. I think your amateur debut is back in 2014. Is there a time range for you of where you would like to be, you know, say to get a UFC offer? Is it next 12 months? I mean, is it next 6 months? I mean, or is it just kind of for you, I take it day by day and take whatever comes my way?
Yeah, just take it day by day, man. I'm not trying to be, you know, too hung on the promotion when it comes to, you know, choices and things of that nature. I would love to. Even if it's a last-minute call, I'm all for it. I'm 100% ready for whoever and whatever. And best believe, it's not going to be no easy pick. This ain't no, you know, just a stepping stool. I'm not no stepping stool, so I'm just letting it be known. If you choose me, I'm coming with the full heat, no matter who it is. It can be your top guy if you want it to be. I'm going to show you why I'm the top dog wherever I am at. So that, if that may be, if I get called, I get called. And I hope so. It would be a life-changing thing for me.
And, of course, we look forward to seeing when that fourth fight may take place. Native Man, I really appreciate you coming on the show. Let everyone know where they can follow you on social media. And if you want to shout out your sponsors, man, go ahead.
Oh, yeah. Appreciate it. Well, you guys can follow me on Twitter. It's Nate the Savage Smith. It started with a capital S with a number one. And then the Instagram is the Savage King 125. Facebook is Nate the Savage Smith fight fan page. It's kind of pretty simple. It sounds like a tongue twister. And I also like to shout out my agency, Team Meridium, Dark Side. Appreciate everything you guys do. Terp House, I really do appreciate you guys for the recovery and the things you guys do for me and the other athletes. And as well, I just became an ambassador for Onyx Sports. So shout out to Onyx Sports, Rush Jones as well, and Factory X. I mean, X on the chest, baby, it speaks for itself.
And there was my conversations with Emmanuel Sanchez, Devontae Smith, Julio Rosa, and Nate Smith. Of course, Emmanuel Sanchez challenging Patricio Pitbull for the featherweight title next Thursday in Israel. Of course, that event that'll air on Friday on DAZN and the Paramount Network. So, yeah, good luck trying to avoid what happens there, because I'm pretty sure the results will be out there. By the way, speaking of Bellator 209, coming up on next week's edition of the podcast, I'll be joined by Patricio Pitbull and Phil Davis. Of course, Phil will be a part of that fight card as well. Also, you heard from Devontae Smith, who's going to be taking on Julio Rosa. Of course, part of the storyline, they're both represented by the same manager. Also, you know, you heard Devontae talk about guys turning him down. Julio Rosa talking about fighters turning him down, and basically noting that Beneil Dariush appears to be the fighter that turned down Devontae Smith, which I think you can kind of understand a little bit of why Beneil, maybe turned down that fight. Of course, now going to take on Thiago Moses. And then Nate Smith, it was really interesting to kind of hear him talking about, whether, the whole, hey, will I move up to 135 pounds, which that's kind of a, the UFC really hasn't come out, but we'll see what happens there. So I appreciate all those fighters coming on this week's edition of the podcast. But Dan, let's get into UFC Fight Night 139. Gonna be headlined by the Korean Zombie taking on Yair Rodriguez. Of course, initially was gonna be Frankie Edgar versus Chan Sung Jung. And I said this on last week's podcast, I love this fight way more than I love the Korean Zombie versus Frankie Edgar, because I thought that was just going to be a complete domination by Frankie. But man, I love this main event. Look, there's not a ton of fights on Saturday's card that I'm all in on. The main event, sign me up for.
Yes, sir. I mean, this card should be called UFC Fight Night. We have three great fights and a bunch of prospects. Like, that's the name of the card there. I mean, that's it. I mean, it's Borg Benavidez, it's Cerrone Perry, it's Yair and Korean Zombie, and it's a bunch of prospects after that. And, Raquel Germain de Rendeme. Yeah, that's a fight, I guess, but it doesn't really get me to the old TV screen at this point. But, man, the things that are making me make some popcorn, grill up a filet mignon, and get some, some Fanta drink is these top two fights in particular. Absolute barn burners. You're right. Yair, Korean Zombie. Oh, man, I'm so excited for this fight. You know, styles make fights, and so does comparative skill level. These two guys are close on a skill level. These two guys are aggressive. And I think if you're an MMA fan, you time it just right and you turn on this show right when Cerrone and Perry are about to fight each other, you're in for just a phenomenal hour of mixed martial arts. I mean, needless to say, you will not find better back-to-back fights when it comes to what we expect inside the cage than the co-main event and main event of this week's card.
Yeah, I mean, that co-main event between Cerrone and Perry, I don't know who to pick in that fight, and a lot of that, I mean, look, to me, clearly Donald Cerrone is the better martial artist. I don't think anyone would doubt that, but kind of at this point of Donald Cerrone's career, kind of where is he at? Mike Perry, I mean, look, we know he's got, devastating, power in his hands. Of course, there's that backstory of the Jackson Wink, where, of course, Perry's now at, and Cerrone no longer a part of that. We got Yair Rodriguez, first time fighting since May of 2017. Germaine de Romandeme, we're seeing her for the first time since February of 2017. Of course, that's when she won, became the inaugural UFC women's featherweight champion. You mentioned about Benavidez and Borg, and God knows what's going to happen, 125 pounds. But great matchup between those two guys. Of course, this fight was actually supposed to take place at UFC 229, but because of the whole Conor bus situation, Brooklyn Ray Borg could not be on that fight card due to some legal situations there. But you do mention you mentioned those great fights, but then, those top, three fights that you mentioned of the main event, co-main event, and Benavidez Borg. And the rest of this card really is about who is that prospect that has the highest ceiling. And I think there's a couple of fighters I would look at, Daniel. You know, Macy Barber, one of the ones I would look at. I also would look at Luis Pena, and he might be the guy that I'm most interested in.
What interests you about Violent Bob Ross?
Well, first off, you know, this is a guy that I followed his career, you know, here on the East Coast of the United States. You know, he fought in Valor. He fought in Shamrock, I believe, as well. You know, he's moved out to AKA, training there full time. And, of course, you know, got connected with AKA through the Ultimate Fighter. To me, he's got the fighting abilities, but he also has the personality that is going to get people interested in him.
Too, totally. Exactly. And I think I cannot wait to see him fight. I think he's going to be just he's due for a great performance against Mike Trezano. I really do think Pena's going to go out there, and he likely is going to have a first round, second round finish. So I think a lightweight, that's the biggest struggle for Pena in terms of like highest ceiling. But in terms of guys I'm most excited to watch, he's right up there. In terms of females I'm most excited to watch, there's only one. I mean, it's a Macy Barber. That's why I think she has the highest ceiling, is the fact that the roadmap to stardom in the women's strawweight division, there are much less roadblocks than at lightweight. I think that really helps. And also, based on how young she is, we're talking about, what, a 20-year-old, mm-hmm. you know, looks great in LFA, looked solid in the Contender Series. And Macy Barber is the one fighter that I have circled and checkmarked. I cannot wait to see her fight. I think the UFC knows she's got a lot of potential, and that's why she, to me, is the can't-miss fighter, the fighter with the most upside as a prospect. And then, you know, Devontae Smith, you know, we talked about him a bit already on this podcast. He is the other guy I look at and think, man, he is put in a position against a solid opponent in Julian Arosa, where I think he's due to have just a really, really nice performance. So if we're lining up kind of the three prospects to look at here, it's Devontae at lightweight, it's Pena at lightweight, and it's Macy Barber.
Yeah, I mean, of course, Arosa, you know, really, he's a 145-pound fighter, but you got to take this opportunity. You know, Macy Barber, she is the second biggest betting favorite on this card as we record this podcast here on Wednesday morning. She's minus 430. The biggest favorite on this card is Davi Ramos at minus 950, taking on John Gunther. You know, in terms of the prelims, what, you know, I would honestly, you know, Thiago Moses, of course, you know, anyone who's been watching LFA over the last year and a half, very familiar with him, taking on Benil Dariush. You know, that really, you know, outside of seeing how Devontae Smith and Julian Arosa goes, Dariush Moses would be the fight on the prelims that you tell me I can only watch one fight in the prelims, it's probably that fight.
Yeah, I agree with you. That one is right up there. I don't even know. Like maybe a fight like Eric Shelton, Justin Morales is all right. But to me, you look at those prelims, Dariush Moses really, really sticks out after Smith and Arosa. I think even watching Chess Kelly fight again, he's in a tough fight with Bobby Moffitt for sure at featherweight. But Chess Kelly is another fighter where he had a tough loss last time we saw him in 2017 against Jason Knight. But throughout his UFC career, I mean, he has won, I believe he's looking at 6-1 or 6-3 in his record. And for Scaly, I mean, he's got a really nice wrestling base, a lot of potential. It's been a while since we've seen him fight. And when he returns under the lights, maybe he has changed it, upgraded his game a bit. So that's a fight where it's real close on paper. Moffitt's good, but I think Scaly is going to win that fight.
He mentioned about Chaz Kelly. This actually be his first fight since May of 2017, which was a TKO defeat against Jason Knight. He had won back-to-back fights prior to that, and if you're someone who likes to look at trends, he has never lost back-to-back fights in his career, so the trends would say that he's definitely would be in line to get the victory here on Saturday night in Denver, Colorado. Of course, this is the 25th anniversary show of the UFC, so I'm sure we'll see a lot of video packages kind of about the history of the UFC. In terms of our picks, you know, in the main event, Chan Sung Jung versus Yair Rodriguez, I feel more comfortable picking the Korean Zombie.
Me but too. I mean,
but I don't know how good I feel about that, though.
Well, I think this is going to be a close fight. I think most of these rounds, if it goes the distance, which it probably won't, because I think these two guys are going to drop each other a considerable amount of times. So I think they're going to tag each other in the face a whole lot. So there's a chance one of these guys just gets rocked and finished through five rounds. I think Korean Zombie is the pick here. He's a more proven commodity in these type of barn burner wars. And that's why I feel confident taking the Korean Zombie somewhat. But it's not something you can take to the bank, because, again, in this fight, it is going to be close. There are going to be back and forth exchanges. When there's so much room for potential chaos, it's hard to say unequivocally a guy's going to win or lose, Jason. But I'm absolutely in the same boat as you in that I do think Chan Sung Jung is going to beat Yair Rodriguez.
And the Korean Zombie is a slight favorite on this fight, minus 140. Yair Rodriguez is plus 120. Now, the co-main event, Donald Cerrone versus Mike Perry. Mike Perry is the betting favorite, minus 230. Donald Cerrone, plus 190. And, you know, this is one of those fights I think it's in terms of, I believe Donald Cerrone is the better fighter, but this is a guy that has not been on a good run. You know, 1-4 in his last five fights. Those losses against Jorge Masvidal, Robbie Lawler, Darren Till, and Leon Edwards, all obviously, you know, very solid 170-pound fighters. The one win was against Yancy Medeiros back in February of the beginning of this year. This is now the third fight of 2018 for Donald Cerrone. Now, when you look at Mike Perry on the other side, this is a guy that is coming off that split decision win against Paul Felder, but he had lost back-to-back fights prior to that, both decision losses against Max Griffin and Santiago Ponzinibbio. Why do I just feel like this is going to be two guys who are just going to say, screw it, we're staying in the middle, and let's just, in a phone booth, and let's brawl.
Because you've seen Mike Perry fight. You've seen Cowboy Cerrone fight. You know what these guys bring to the table. I mean, this is what they dream of when they go to sleep. You know, when they think of the best possible UFC appearance, it's a old-fashioned Western Red Dead Redemption 2-style shootout. And, yeah, this is going to be like a awesome college football game with two hard-hitting offenses going back and forth. And Mike Perry is my pick here as well. I think it goes down to the specific physics of his power. I think if these guys unleash 10, 20, 30 exchanges, it's more likely that Mike Perry puts away Cerrone than Cerrone puts away Mike Perry. So that's kind of my thought process in terms of picking Mike Perry. But again, I mean, this is – each guy is the perfect opponent. When you ask them what they want out of a mixed martial arts fight, I think they're going to want an opponent like Mike Perry or an opponent like Cowboy Cerrone.
I don't feel good about this, but I'm going to pick Don Cerrone.
Hey, man.
And the reason is I just think he's a smart fighter. I think he'll use his reach advantage to his advantage. I think that if he fights a smart fight, he doesn't get into a brawl. I think we see a lot of leg kicks from Donald Cerrone in this fight. So I'm going to pick him as a slight underdog in this fight. But man, don't feel good about this, because I could definitely see that both these guys say, screw the game plan. Let's go out here. Let's try to win a $50,000 bonus. And if you tell me one guy gets clipped, I think it's Donald Cerrone gets clipped. But, man, don't feel good about making my Donald Cerrone pick. Then we've got Raquel Pennington and Jermaine de Romandeme. Of course, this is at 135 pounds. And mentioned a little earlier, first time we've seen Jermaine since February of last year when she won that 145-pound title. And, of course, we all know what happened after that. And, of course, Raquel Pennington, you know, the question I have with her is, how does she bounce back after what happened earlier this year against that fight against Amanda Nunes, where, I mean, look, she was beat up pretty bad in that fight. You know, I'm going to pick Raquel Pennington in this one. And part of the reason I'm going to pick her is I think that maybe she can close the distance, potentially get this fight to the ground. But if this fight is on the feet, to me, it'll be Jermaine de Romandeme's fight.
Oh, yes, totally. I think Pennington is aware of that. I think she's going to eliminate that aspect. But for anime, I mean, Pennington found herself in a similar position. She had a long, long layoff before her fight against Amanda Nunes. And it showed. I mean, regardless, she had a long layoff or not, Amanda is so dominant that the fight would have played out similarly. But in this sport, when you take such a time off away from the cage and you aren't competing in the professional atmosphere of a UFC event, you're going to be rusty right off the bat. I think that's going to be a struggle for Darren Dame, who we've not seen her lose since 2013. I mean, she's rode off three consecutive wins, including a really impressive victory over Holly Holm. Not in terms of like the actual fight. It was not a great fight. But just beating Holly Holm, you know, tip your cap to her. And it showcases her stand-up level is at a level in which Raquel does not want to play that game. I don't think she will either. I think she will win this fight. But this is a fight with plenty of question marks. You mentioned, how does Raquel rebound? And as well as, what is Germaine as a fighter today? I think Pennington's the safer pick just because we've seen her fight before in the past year. And I'm going with Raquel.
Then we got Benavidez and Ray Borg. Just Benavidez. This is pretty much a pick and fight on the betting odds. Benavidez -105, Ray Borg -115. Of course, Joseph returned earlier this year after being gone since the end of 2016. A split decision loss against Sergio Pettis. I didn't think he looked very good in that fight. And of course, Ray Borg, this is his first fight in 13 months. Of course, as he was submitted by Demetrius Johnson back at UFC 216. Of course, everyone knows, you know, all the personal things that, with his child that has been going on in Ray Borg's life. You know, I think that for the most part, I want to say Ray Borg, I kind of betting against Lil' Joseph Benavidez, but I think we see Benavidez bounce back here, you know, kind of learn from those mistakes of the Sergio Pettis fight, and I think we see a decision win by Joseph.
Yeah, just a great flyweight contest. I mean, Joseph Benavidez, man, he has certainly struggled in a way that I did not expect at this point in his career. That loss to Pettis was absolutely a bit of a shock. Sergio's a great fighter, but I did think Benavidez again. I mean, his claim to fame is he's the best flyweight not named Demetrius Johnson. Now that claim is absolutely in threat, but I think against Ray Borg, a guy who's quite good and a guy who it's hard not to root for him, seeing what he's gone through over the past year. But I think Benavidez is going to return to that point. I think he sees the flyweight championship is at a vulnerable spot here. Mm-hmm. Before it evaporates into thin air as if Thanos snaps his fingers, I think Benavidez wants to get his hands on the flyweight championship. So I think this fight will be the first step towards attempting to get there.
Yeah, and our first two fights on the main card feature two fights with four fighters who do not have a Wikipedia page, if you like to keep that fact. We got Macy, we've already mentioned Macy Barber and Luis Pena, two of the people. I expect both those fighters to get a win. Daniel, you're in agreement with that, right?
Yeah, to me, these are absolute showcase fights for either fighter. If they don't win, I mean, something terrible went wrong for them.
Yeah, I mean, look, and the thing about Luis Pena, I think if he would have not gotten injured on the Ultimate Fighter, I think he would have won that season. Your TV prelims will be on FS1 starting at 8 p.m. Eastern Time, 5 p.m. out on the West Coast. Of course, main card will start 10 p.m. Eastern Time, 7 p.m. on the West Coast. Your feature matchup will be Ashley Yoder versus Amanda Cooper. Of course, the other fights we've already mentioned, Chaz Kelly versus Bobby Moffitt, Benil Dariush versus Thiago Moses, and Devontae Smith versus Julian Arosa. We'll kind of go down our picks here fairly quickly on this one. When it comes to Amanda Cooper and Ashley Yoder, I'm going to go with the favorite, Ashley Yoder. Give me Chaz Skelly, even though I think that's a very tough fight he's in against Bobby Moffitt. I'm going to go Benil Dariush, but man, don't feel good about it, and I'll take Devontae Smith.
Yeah, I think Amanda Cooper wins a close one against Yoder. Skelly and Dariush are my picks, and then Devontae Smith again over Julian Arosa.
And then on the Fight Pass prelims, you got three fights. Those are going to start at 6:30 p.m. Eastern Time, 3:30 p.m. Pacific Time. We've got your feature matchup will be Davi Ramos versus John Gunther. I would be fairly surprised if Davi Ramos doesn't get the win there. Joseph Morales, Eric Shelton, man, that's a great fight. Give me Eric Shelton. And then we got Mark De La Rosa versus Joby Sanchez. Give me Mark De La Rosa.
Give me Davi Ramos. Give me Mark De La Rosa, and then again, a solid fight. I like Eric Shelton as well.
But, you know, kind of as Daniel mentioned earlier, I mean, really, your top three fights are our top three fights, the main event, co-main event, also Benavidez Borg. That's really what's getting you to the television set on Saturday night. But if you're looking for prospects, Macy Barber, Luis Pena, Devontae Smith are three other reasons to tune into UFC Fight Night 139. But we do want to wrap up this week's edition of the podcast by doing our weekly buy-sell segment. We've got, first of all, let's talk about Ben Askren, of course. Ben was in attendance at UFC 230, UFC finally kind of noting, yes, Ben Askren is part of the UFC now. And Brett Okamoto reported on Monday that it looks like it's going to be Ben Askren, Robbie Lawler in the January pay-per-view in Anaheim. I believe that's January 26th. Daniel, buy, sell. Ben Askren will still be unbeaten in November 2019.
I will absolutely buy this. I think the fight against Robbie Lawler is a fight in which Ben Askren has a pretty clear path to victory. I think if you tell me what happens like in the first minute, I'll tell you who wins. I mean, if Ben Askren takes down Robbie Lawler, he's probably going to win. If he doesn't, he's probably going to lose. But I think Ben Askren finds himself undefeated. Again, it's just like I feel very confident in him executing his game plan. And in the UFC, I think he's going to be able to do that against most welterweights.
By the way, if our listeners have not seen his media scrum from this past Saturday night, UFC 230, go on YouTube and watch it. It is classic Ben Askren.
Oh, my God. Yeah, he is just owning the spotlight, both in the media scrums as well as even on social media.
I mean, look, he's a tough matchup. I mean, he is the Khabib of 170 pounds. I mean, that's what he is. I mean, if you can't stop that takedown, you're most likely in for a very long night against Ben Askren. I mean, we saw it in Bellator. We've seen him in one championship. And, you know, look, he's got a fighting style that there is going to be a section of the UFC fan base will not care to watch. But to me, you tell me Ben Askren's fighting January 26th, which, by the way, is the same night as the Bellator, event in L.A. with Fedor and Bader. To me, you tell me Ben Askren's fighting, I'm watching the UFC.
Me too. I mean, maybe once the fight starts, I might my attention might be lost, but. I watch the card, you know. Once he's on top for 2 minutes, Jason, I might start looking around my room and contemplating life.
You might start, it's like, hey, maybe I should start cleaning the house a little bit here because I kind of know how this is going to go. I'm telling you, that's what, when I watched UFC Fight Night cards live, like if it's certain day, I'm like, oh, I need to clean the house. Oh, no, there's a UFC card tonight. I know there's going to be plenty of time between fights. I can do it later.
Yeah, you have those huge, you know,
tip for the fight fan. If you need to clean your house on a fight night card and you're going to watch the fights, just wait till during the fights because you're going to have plenty of time.
They're going to give you so much time. So much time. Like, we're talking 20 minutes in between fights to
oh, man, that's why it is so hard for me to watch cable cards live these days. It's just so hard for me. I struggle with it. It's a struggle for me, you know? And plus the whole thing of, especially when I know I've, you know, like on Sunday morning, I got to be up at like 6, 7 o'clock in the morning to get to the stadium, man. Staying up till, you know, 1:30 is a little rough.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a lifestyle that is fun, but it's a lifestyle you live that you got to get that sleep.
I mean, if daylight savings time would have been this week instead of last week, oh, that'd been ideal. Because, look, yeah. I want to see Chan Sung Jung Rodriguez. I just don't know if I can stay up till 1 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah, man. And it's something where you want to watch those fights fully aware. Just stay away from spoilers. But, I mean, I know for you it's impossible to stay away from spoilers. I mean, you got to stay in touch.
At this
with
point,
everything.
It doesn't really matter to me. And I found myself, like, when I go back on DVR, for the most part, like, I put it on mute. And, you know, I, like, put, like, music on, and I'll just watch the fights. Because one of the things that when you listen to commentary, it can alter your thought process on what you're seeing.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, they come in there, and you know, if it's a clear fight, like let's say Macy Barber's fight, and she's taking on Hannah Cyphers, and if it's a close fight, I guarantee you, watching that fight, you're gonna think Macy Barber's winning if you listen to the commentary.
Oh, yeah,
those
totally.
Guys are gonna go in there looking to spotlight Macy. I mean, that's the expectation, and so like anytime she does anything good, there's gonna be a closer pull to praise that, and so yeah, that's how it influences.
Oh yeah. By the way, are you buying or selling that Dana White's truly going to unblock Ben Askren on Twitter?
No, I'm going to sell that. He's not going to do it. I think
it's happened. Now, does it mean he's not going to block Ben at some other point?
yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, but Ben's like a baby. I mean, he's more than a baby, but he's like I've never had a baby, but or like it's like a thing where if Dana acknowledges him. Man, he's not going to get rid of him. Like, if Dana acknowledges it and unblocks him, like, then we're talking Dana White mentions every other day. You know, then he might have to block him.
Hey, but if you're Ben Askren, all of a sudden everyone in the welterweight division wants to fight you. It's good to be in the Ben Askren business right now.
100%, yeah. A guy who we thought was retired is now a very, very not retired.
Now, were you like me? I guess this was Monday morning when you woke up and saw the Floyd Mayweather news.
How are you?
I was kind of like, am I really awake or am I dreaming this? That was like, and I know there are probably listeners that are going, guys, why the hell are you talking about Floyd Mayweather? But you know, let's buy or sell this. Are you going to watch this Floyd Mayweather exhibition/fight against a kickboxer live?
I probably won't watch it live, so I'm going to sell that. I probably will watch it. I mean, Tenshin Nasukawa is a name who we're going to be talking about for a long time. I mean, we've seen it time and again. These guys who become major names in the kickboxing world and in Japan, and they transition to MMA. So Tenshin Nasukawa, I mean, at this point, he's competed a few times in the mixed martial arts, I believe. I think he's going to become – he already is a huge star in Japan. And I think he beat Kyoji Horiguchi in a kickboxing match, I think, at one of the last Rising shows. So Tenshin Nasukawa is a name to be aware of. I mean, he's 20 years old. He's a prodigy-type athlete. I'm not going to be watching this live, but I will watch this. I think it's, you know, Japan looking at what happened with Mayweather and McGregor and think if we do this, Tenshin will be an even bigger star.
Here's my question about it is where is this thing going to air? Because obviously you're bringing Floyd Mayweather in. You're paying this guy a lot of money. You know, could this maybe be an ESPN Plus also, or you know, any other U.S. broadcasting, you know, service pay per view? But I also sit there and say, I wonder if they're going to adjust the time when Floyd fights to maximize a U.S. audience.
I don't know. I feel like the priority here is the Japanese audience.
Like, look, if you tell me Floyd, the Rising card is going to be on, you know, hypothetically, ESPN Plus, the Floyd fight is going to air 9, 10 o'clock, you know, 8, 9 o'clock in the morning, East Coast time, I'll tune in.
Yeah, that's kind of
sign me up for this spectacle.
That's kind of the sneaky great time to watch it, isn't it? It's like
that to me would be like the ideal time. People are waking up on New Year's Eve. You know, they're starting to kind of, you know, do things around the house. You pop on the TV because, look, nothing against Fight TV here. Okay. They've been a supporter of the MMA Report podcast. You know, love those guys. This ain't going to be on Fight TV. I mean, if it's on Fight TV, it's going to be an astronomical price.
Yeah,
I bet you if it's on Fight, minimum $65.
Yeah, if it's Floyd Mayweather, it's going to be $65.
Because what? I think normally our Ryzen cards on Fight like $15.
Mm-hmm.
It ain't $15 for this one, baby. It is not $15.
Especially, and the worst part is like it's not going to be a full fledged boxing bout. I don't think it needs to be like some type of exhibition.
Yeah, it's going to be a spectacle. Let's call it what it is. By the way, I did watch the CES card live last Friday night, and they did air the John Gotti III fight, gets another win. Buy or sell, John Gotti III fights in the UFC or Bellator in the next 12 months. Daniel, all caps, BUY.
Yeah, man. Like,
and actually, let me put an asterisk next to this one, as long as he keeps winning. Obviously, if he loses a couple fights, then you're going to have him. As long as he keeps winning, there is no doubt in my mind this guy will either be in the UFC or Bellator, and I would even say in the next 6 months.
Yeah, I could see it, absolutely. I mean, this guy's going to draw a lot of money in New York. That's all I'm going to say. It's like, if he keeps on winning.
Would the UFC put him on the Barclays show in January?
I think that'd be an interesting choice. I mean, to me, this guy has.
It would be too soon for that. But man, yeah, could you imagine? Like, if you're the UFC or Bellator, and you put John Gotti III on your main card in New York.
Mm-hmm. I think that would be. If it doesn't happen now, it's going to happen every New York card. I'll say that much. But I could see him put him in Barclays just because, like, put him in a feature bout, you know, a prelim bout, or in an easy fight that. Would make sense for him in SEC CES and put it there.
Or I think you look at him as when the Contender Series returns in the summer of 2019, I think he would be a guy that would probably have to be on the radar if he puts together another win or two.
Yeah, I agree with you as well.
Yeah, It's you know, because that fight was actually on the prelims, which I thought was kind of interesting that they didn't put him on the main card, but then they ended up showing the fight on the main card. But yeah, it was a little surprising. Of course, that CES card went through a change where Dennis Piva had to pull out of the event due to weight cutting issues, and Cody Norby ends up stepping up to take his spot in that fight. But yeah, I watched the access card on Friday night, and of course this weekend, you know, I saw. Are you going to watch Johnny Hendricks, Brandon Ward, and bare knuckle boxing?
I'm not going to watch it live, but if something crazy happens, it's going to make its way to the internet. I will watch it on Twitter. Yeah. Are you gonna watch it?
No. I was the last bare knuckle event that was on, that the one that was in Mississippi, which was another organization. I was at a buddy's house, and he ordered the fights, and yeah, just not my thing.
Yeah, mine either, for sure. Mine either.
You know, I think, you know, I mean, look, it's, I'm not against it. I mean, look, I think the reality is with bare knuckle boxing is that it's going to be very limited in the states they can go to. When I had Andy Foster and Mike Mazzulli on the podcast earlier this summer, and I brought it up, and I pretty much got the hell no from both of them that they're not going to be a part of it. And I think that's going to be a struggle for bare knuckle boxing. And I think the other struggle they're going to have is they're always going to be a pay-per-view model. I just don't see a ESPN or a Fox going, okay, we want to put this on some type of platform we have. Because I could never see that happen. I mean, I don't even think you'd see like a Showtime put it on.
Yeah, I don't think so either. I think knuckle on flesh is brutal. It really is. I mean, it's something where it's on. I probably can't not watch it. But again, I think the way this, I just don't see it on my television screen. I don't think I'll be flipping channels and get into bare knuckle boxing. I don't even know if this is going to be a thing that exists in a year from now. But maybe this is an audio clip they'll play 15 years from now and be like, ha-ha, those idiots. They didn't realize bare-knuckle boxing is going to take off and take over America.
Well, I think the sad thing that you're seeing is I feel like it's kind of like the last straw for some fighters. And that's when I talk to people about it, that is kind of the – when you hear a negative vibe about it, that's kind of what it is. Is that why, you know, I mean, like Chris Lieben, you know, remember what he said before? Now he's fighting bare knuckle. So it's just not my cup of tea. You know, Saturday night, I'll watch the UFC for a little bit before I basically say, okay, time for me to go to bed and I'll watch the wrestling fights on the DVR. But yeah. Man, I'm obviously looking forward to that main event. And, you know, then we've got Bellator next Thursday, which unfortunately DVR, tape delay event, which is unfortunate. But we'll have Patricio Pitbull and Phil Davis. Also, I'll have Steve Montgomery working on getting him on the podcast next week. He's going to be fighting for the first time in a while. He's gone through a bunch of injury situations fighting down in South Florida. Also reaching out to a couple other people to get them on the podcast as well. So as always, we do appreciate you listening to this podcast. Be sure to subscribe, rate, and review on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, and Google Play. And of course, a new episode comes out every Wednesday on RadioInfluence.com.
This is a Duffified Live with Chef Brian Duffy Quick Fix on Radio Influence.
Everybody, do me a favor. Rev up your engine. Get ready for Duffified Live. Mr. Alan Lane, publisher, journalist, Sport Bikes, Inc.
I was a late bloomer. I didn't start riding until I was closer to 20. I saw the stress and the wear that it had on my mom, that she went through while she worried about Greg. I just kind of waited till I got out of high school, and Greg got me into bikes. Remember, my first bike was an 87 Honda Nighthawk 750 with a bad alternator. The battery kept dying, and I loved the bike, but I hated it at the same time because it wasn't
an electrical problem.
It wasn't reliable, you know. And
yeah,
it was really a pain in the ass. But I loved it, but it was a pain in the ass. it was like a couple of first relationships that I was in. You loved it, but
she was the best, but goddamn.
Yeah, right. Like, so why can't she just work the way I wanted her to work? I'm happily married now, though. I will say that I'm happily married.
Gotcha.
But, this was early on. So the, Nighthawk 750. And, you know, I fell in love with everything that being a motorcyclist brought to the table. When I was a kid, I read comic books. And so, you know, for me to find a way as an adult to wear leather boots, right, gloves, jacket, helmet, and look like a superhero and be cool about it, I was all in.
Duffified Live with Chef Brian Duffy can be found on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Play, and RadioInfluence.com.